Much like the great earthquake of 2024 that shook us all to the core, we are here to shake up the podcast industry with another exciting episode of Smash Cuts right after this. Welcome to episode 177 of Smash Cuts. Sean has returned. How are you, sir?
I'm here. Slowly becoming more of a father. I finally started Bluey.
There you go.
She was not interested in it at all. So I was like, well, this seems pointless.
Was that Sean Chandler's influence when you listened to last week's episode?
Pretty much. It's been a couple of them. I think there's been a few guests that are new fathers and they talk about Bluey and I'm like, shoot, I want to wait for her to enjoy it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, she's looking at the screen all the time, so she can't look at the screen while I watch Shogun and like samurais are getting decapitated. like I can't imagine that being healthy for her memories.
Listen, you know, she's got to watch it at some point. With the way that your watch schedule is, she needs to get on board.
it's becoming very, very clear. Like, it's not too bad. I'm still watching quite a lot, but that watch schedule is dwindling fast. And but you know, I will. Sesame Street is dope. Like, it's the same pattern every single one of them. They up the production value. It's pretty solid. So I'm learning about mung beans, and I'm psyched.
How did you refer to it, to your life in a text message yesterday? It was like, my new life or something. Oh, yeah.
I forgot what it exactly was, yeah, but it's where I'm standing.
Well, you're still, doing a great job of catching the latest releases, and today we're going to talk Immaculate, and then we're going to dive into Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man. But why don't we start with Immaculate? When I talk about shocking reviews that I've seen online, you giving this an A and loving it the way that you did blew me away. So we have to start. First of all, Immaculate's new film. Again, nuns are having a great month here between this and The First Omen. But Immaculate is a film that Sydney Sweeney stars in, but she first auditioned for back in 2014. Because of a lot of budgetary issues, whatever, the film was never made. But now that she is a household name, or becoming one, I should say, and is she has her own production company, they bought the script, punched it up, and here's Immaculate in theaters in 2024.
Which well, 10 times better than that, because the conservative narrative is like, they've gotten innocent Sydney Sweeney now. And it's like, no, she created all of this. Like,
she's the one.
Like, nobody got her. She got herself. This is her job.
She got herself, and the film got you. Talk about your review here.
Oh, God. It is just so strange where I really did love this movie. It's got these simple horror elements in it of someone has to get out of a thing. There could be complexities here. And I think the main criticism is, does the film actually reach the interesting messaging or complexities? And, you know, kind of, but not really. They get into like sort of element of choice, but not in a way that like they're really exploring anyway. I just really like loved that I was scared, because I've been in a lot of horror movies where I haven't been scared. And I'm, by the way, very easily scared. And I think that the way this horror movie did it, by just torturing you sometimes. And, you know, people talk about jump scares as being a swear word in horror movies. But if you do them right, jump scares are some of the best stuff you can use. And I think in here they were done right. This set piece is perfect because it is a place where nuns are dying. And so they're mentally not great. You know, they have dementia. So they're already like, there's already this creepy element to it where they'll just show up and say random stuff. And so like right at that moment when they're going through the place, I was just like, okay, I'm in a happy home right now. This is exactly where I want to be for horror. And then, you know, like the log line is she's pregnant with a demon baby, and to not get into spoilers, it's way more complicated than that, and kind of way more awesome in a sick, twisted way, which, you know, I will address this as someone who is, grown up Catholic. Sure, I guess we could say this is sacrilegious, but at the same time, it's kind of so far bonkers fiction that if you really let this movie bother you like it's bothering right-wing groups, I don't know what to do with you, because it's not true. It's not a documentary that they're saying this occurred like this. It didn't. And so it feels strange.
You and I texted about this a little bit. It covers, I mean, it highlights really fucked up people in a church, right?
Yeah.
In Catholicism. And there's fucked up people everywhere. So, like, if you can just admit that there's always a group that might go crazy, whatever, then you're fine. This is not a takedown of the religion. It's just focused on really shitty people doing really shitty things because they're a little cuckoo, as you said.
Literally, the priest that is involved in this is a straight up mad scientist. And so yes. It's like, what? How can you actually like take this, you know, seriously? Like, you can't. And so it's instead, it just became an absolute fun blast horror in the end. And I got to give it up for Sydney Sweeney, who now I know that much about her, where first of all, her marketing campaign has been great with this. She's been watching. Which I think is great.
Say that again. You cut out for a sec.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to give credit for Sydney Sweeney's marketing campaign. Apparently, she's watching this with nuns, and she's having an absolute blast promoting this. But it's always really important, and this is like an unfortunate world that we live in, where you know what? There's more articles about the size of Sydney Sweeney's breasts even in 2024 than about like her talent. Which, guess what? Her talent is really good. It's good in Euphoria, however you feel about Euphoria. It's good in this. She is a really talented actress. And she like goes from, I think I wrote this in my review. She doesn't exactly try to be like Maria from Sound of Music in this. She just plays herself as a nun. And then, you know, then all of a sudden when she's brought through like the ringer by the end of it, she just is absolutely guttural in this performance. And it is,
oh my God, amazing. The last 2 minutes of the movie. Hello.
Leaves it all on the table right for you.
Yeah. I won't stand for this Madam Web erasure, but we'll move on. You know what's really interesting? As you were talking about this film and having seen the first Omen since, it's so fascinating because the description very much tracked the first Omen for a lot of it. And I'm like sitting here in my head trying to remember back like to the distinguishing features of both films so that I'm not getting them confused and overlapping. And it's actually pretty tough.
That's interesting, actually, because like it is once again nun and demon baby, I guess, like is first Omen. But yeah, that'll be if I can get away this week, I'm gonna try to pull that one off, because nice. I of course love the original Omen, and I will say like I didn't want like a legacy prequel like this, but those trailers were just so damn good, like they're like for that marketing department as well, just well done on all accounts.
It's, I mean, we're not talking about First Omen today, but it is a good film. It's well created, well put together. The production value is definitely there. And Nell Tiger Free kind of owns it, like Sydney Sweeney, honestly. Very similar in terms of just how they leave it all on the table. But it's kind of one of those, did we need this? And we all know where it's going by the end. And it also leaves some loose ends that are going to result in other prequels, I'm sure. So here we go. You know, can't just have one film be successful. Immaculate was a very nice surprise. I really enjoyed it. One of the things I love the most about it is you were saying that like it gets a little bit more complicated, but even in its in how complicated it gets, there's a simplicity that really makes it work. And it's a very straightforward story, honestly, once you learn what's happening. And it's a contained film. It's an hour and 29 minutes. It just hits you right away. And like, listen, it was effective. I think it's kind of wild. Like, we talk a lot about short runtimes and how we love a good tight film there. I could have gone longer with this. I would have loved to have seen more. And I think that there was more that they could have explored. But I also like that they were like, no, we're just going to hit you with this. This is a contained story. This is what it is. And, you know, of course, thinking sequels and stuff, maybe there's opportunity in the future to explore this corner of the world a little bit more. But I don't want it, actually. No, you know,
it would be too weird. I can't even like imagine how a sequel could be written for this. Like,
it wouldn't involve her character likely, or, you know, could in a way. But that it all culminates in that final scene that was just amazing. And it lets the camera runs. And let Sydney Sweeney do her thing. And that was just a great way to go out.
Cut out.
Oh, there we go.
We're good.
There we go. Technical issues. The earthquake did it. Yeah, you know, so I still haven't written my final review for this. I think I go like a 4 out of 5 on this, honestly. Mm-hmm. There were some pieces that I was like, okay, we're doing this again. Yeah. And I think that's a struggle with a story like this. Obviously, we again, referring to the first Omen, we see a very similar story. So kind of breaking out of that, like, exploration of bodily autonomy and immaculate conception is kind of, I don't know. I'm ready for a new take on like the nun horror, but this delivered very well.
I mean, I'm just thankful, like, you know, devil movies like are scary again because they've just haven't been in a while. Like A Kid in a Deep Voice doesn't get to me anymore. And so finally, like this stuff is actually working so much better. And I like how this was just simple. The reaction of this between the box office, bit of a failure, unfortunately, although it's considered the best neon horror movie, which I guess that means Neon doesn't do many horror movies because it's not this didn't do well at the box office, which is a shame. And also the reaction, like, not that I should even care about Rotten Tomatoes, but it in the 70s feels like, okay, that people liked it. And I think people were expecting something more, and I think that's where the like this drop off came. I was talking with Jacob Watches Films, and because the two of us were seemed to be the two that absolutely adored this movie head to toe, and it was like, what's going on? Are we being gaslit? Like, come on! But I just had so much fun, and I couldn't. My jaw was on the floor. I really enjoyed this one.
This definitely screams of a movie that's going to be successful when it hits streaming, and definitely have legs there. So you know, it's. It's an indie horror essentially with Neon, and I think it did well for what was expected. I would have loved to have seen a better reception in terms of the financials at the box office, but like I said, I think this is going to have some legs and prove to be a long-term success in how it's regarded. Whether Neon's happy with that or not, I don't know. Check their wallets, but
as long as Neon just gets the Palme d'Or every year, that's all they care. That is actually all they care about at this point.
Let's talk Monkey Man. Switching gears here, this is Dev Patel's directorial debut, a film that was made over COVID and experienced a lot of turmoil in terms of lockdowns and cast members not being able to get there and broken equipment and some stuff shot on iPhone. And also was originally a Netflix film, which is wild to me. And Jordan Peele was the one that ultimately, with sparing the details, when Braun filed for bankruptcy, it opened the door for Peele to acquire the film and support it getting to theaters, which I think it absolutely deserves to be in theaters. This is a very straightforward revenge story in a lot of ways. It's similar and familiar to a lot of other films. It's kind of a John Wick-ish type, but it does, I think, set itself aside because of the representation within the film that was really a nice swing here. There's obviously it's a primarily Indian cast, which was awesome to explore because it's part of cinema and part of the world that we don't really see depicted on screen that often. And there also is a really, this surprised me, but the transgender angle was like, came out of nowhere with me, or to me, I should say. And I thought it was very well delivered and a nice piece of the film that was, like I said, unexpected.
I need to emphasize that we should never use our phones in the theater, but I had to look up because they were extremely vague about it. And I was like, is this a trans group? And so I looked it up to be sure. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, that's like a crazy turn on that.
Yeah. And I will say, though, that, you know, obviously I'm full support of exploring that. That's where my issues with the movie began, is that it starts off as a very simple revenge story of a young boy who is now a grown man wanting to avenge the death of his mother, which occurred after land was taken. And it gets into it a little bit more with the politics behind it. And there is some political messaging there and exploration in terms of governmental forces over in India. And while it doesn't necessarily get into the specifics of it, you can definitely tell that there's contention there that probably means a lot more to individuals who are more familiar with those struggles and the challenges of the Indian government. But where it lost me was it does go from this small contained story to like a wider, like, he's fighting for the little people. He's fighting for the outcasts. He's fighting for the people that have been displaced. And he's like taking down, you know, the major, not corporations, but the major movers and shakers. And that kind of happens like that. You know, there's the middle of the film is a little bit slow, and it's kind of the development of him into this like representative for the people that have been displaced. And I didn't think it needed to go there. I was kind of frustrated by the plot and how that developed, because the rest of the film is a lot of fun. It's action packed. The camera work is a little frenetic and frantic, I should say, at times. I love found footage stuff. I love the camera movements in the hand, but this one kind of like, you know, goes overboard a little. Yeah, it goes overboard a little bit. And I wonder if that was the result of them having to use iPhones and stuff for certain shots. But Dev Patel is the key here. He owns this film, not only as director, but as an action star. He was phenomenal. Convincing, menacing, definitely, you know, you can read the emotions on his face in every scene. And I just really, really, really enjoyed how he was able to kind of break out of some of the other roles and, you know, the stereotypical boxes that we've seen him placed into to really deliver a really solid film. It's not a bad film at all. It's a good film. It's just familiar.
Yeah, I loved a lot of aspects of this film. I loved a lot of them. And I think I agree with your criticisms of it. And it's tricky because the pace is off on this one. The pace just feels off. And I couldn't pinpoint why it was. And because I felt like everything was needed. There was the moment where they needed to like stop the action for a good hour. And character. And so there though all of these elements were needed, I think it just didn't really just fully gel together. I will say, yes, these action scenes are absolutely just flawless. I want Dev behind the camera more now. He did the good job as the action star that doesn't talk barely and is just like beating people up. And he has that John Wick style where he's impenetrable. And I think what I liked the most about that is that there was a slight like reasoning behind it. Obviously, it's unrealistic beyond all belief. There's no way of getting around that. I don't care anymore. But the dude just spent like probably a large amount of his life getting his ass kicked. So he knew how to get up from an ass kick. So I think from like that sort of like telling of the character, it's like, oh, yeah, no, you could survive a car crash and like then beat up every single cop and get out of there. You couldn't. But it's like that for that.
But we'll take it. We'll take it.
There's at least a slight explanation there. I love what this film did about I kept on. It's an extremely old adage, but I just kept on in my head. I was just like, show, don't tell, show, don't tell. And this movie doesn't exposit at all. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed by that because, you know, I'm on the cusp of being frustrated at not knowing what's going on. But I'm like, I'm interested. Like, you don't know what's going on at all. Like, and so you just know he's trying to get into this place. He definitely doesn't like these people. If you've seen trailers, you know there's a revenge story aspect. But, like, I'm just like, okay, what is his plan now? What is he doing now? This led to, like, some unpredictability that was kind of great for an action movie. I didn't know if he was going to win. I didn't know, like, what his next course was.
On that note, real quick, though, with not knowing what was going to happen and stuff, the flashbacks that ultimately do explain everything, did you feel as though they were delivered in a very choppy fashion? And, they were, but did it work for you? Because that was one of the things that frustrated me. Even some of the flashbacks were a little tough to follow. You were kind of like, what is happening here? And it finally comes together probably after the 1 hour mark, maybe even closer to the end. But I don't know, that kind of bothered me a little bit. I was like, stop teasing me and tell me.
Yeah, this was something that did sort of work for me in the mystery of it. And obviously I could see why it wouldn't work for a lot of people. They're like, dude, just tell us what's going on. Like, we know this guy wants to kill this guy. We don't know why. Like, but we know there's like certain elements. I guess I found myself filling in blanks. And then once they revealed what it was, those blanks were exactly what happened. And so kind of, I guess that was the one thing that was somewhat predictable, was that was the case. And I really did adore this. I know you talked about the camera kind of going in the like very strange ways. We've seen this in a lot of action movies of late. You know, the popular shot now is like when someone's body slamming someone, the camera goes with him,
which I liked.
I love that move. It's like it's been now used in a million action movies. I still love it. It still gets me every time. This was like beautifully shot in some ways, which is like crazy, like well done colors. And I was just so impressed by just a whole heap of this movie. But yeah, it did, like, for the end of it, when everything's happening, I'm like, well, yeah, I get that this is the big bad, but we're not, you know, there was no real personal interaction here. So there's some satisfaction when he gets them. Sorry, I guess spoilers, but when he essentially wins. But it does do a good job of talking about revenge, not in a Get Carter, like revenge never works. Trust me, you'll never feel good. Not in that way, but it's like, you have to make sure you hold on to your purpose for revenge. And so with that, with those final moments of it, I was like, okay, I kind of dig what is going on there. And, we talked like, you know, the Indian caste system is not something I could write a paper about right off the bat, but you know, I've seen a lot of movies and there's been a lot of problems. And, White Tiger was one that like really showed off this a lot. And it's interesting that now, like, these aren't exactly the bookends of Patel's career, because he's going to make more movies, and he did stuff before Slumdog Millionaire. But it's interesting as he came onto the screen with Slumdog Millionaire, which, you know, I think has like had its criticisms about that representation, but also it's fairly authentic toward it. And now this, where it's like, oh, I'm just going to kick everyone's ass that's on that top floor of that hotel. And it's like, cool, man. Like, let's do this. I think that like this will probably be a B for me. I was walking into the theater wanting to give it an A. Boy, that first act, I was like, okay, cool. So this is going to be an A. But you're right, it does just slow. And
it comes back. The last half hour, last 20 minutes is like what I wanted the entire time. But
yeah, exactly. I guess you need to bring in those complications. You need to bring in the Indian lore that they have. Like, he is the monkey man. He's the one that swallowed the sun. I love like that element. I love everything that was in it. I just think, the pacing was just the thing that got me. Great movie, though.
Even that, though, the monkey man stuff, I thought was not fully developed. Like, it's introduced and obviously they revisit a little bit, but I thought that there was more that they could do there to make that connection. Even like when he dyes the mask and then takes it off 5 minutes later, I'm like, what?
Dude, you dye the mask in bleach, which is such a badass move. It's like, and then he just throws it off, which was kind of badass, because he's like, I don't need this legend lore. And on the other hand, I'm like, oh, dude, like,
you made it.
That was so cool. Like, keep that.
Well, you've heard it. You've heard it here first. Smash Cut's very big into revenge. So, speaking of revenge, Dwayne Johnson's continuing his Black Adam revenge tour here, and is a heel in WWE. And as of recording today, WrestleMania Night 1 happened in Philadelphia last night, and he played into that heel a lot. Did you hear what he said the other night, by the way, at like the WrestleMania intro event?
Oh God, I can't even imagine.
To Philadelphia fans, he said, sorry I was late. I was watching YouTube videos of Jalen Hurts losing in the playoffs.
Okay.
Like, he is good at what he does. Well. Yeah. But here's what's going on with Mr. Rock here. He, for some reason, thought that WrestleMania was a great opportunity to sit down and have an interview with Fox News, of all people, and basically made himself more of an enemy of the people in a lot of ways. He said that he endorsed Biden for president in 2020, but he's not going to do that again because it caused division. And it really tears me up in my guts that there was division over his endorsement. And then woke culture really bothers him. Just a lot of, in my opinion, very self-centered, aggrandizing, self-aggrandizing. Like, the idea of it, like how he views himself and the importance that he places on everything that he does. And he even says in this interview, like, the most followed man on social media or something in the world. Like, I just always think back to when he kept saying he was going to save DC films, and how he always just thinks that his films are going to be like the savior of the world, like kind of like Christopher Nolan with Tenet, always thinks that things are going to be that much bigger than they really are. And this man just continues to chart a path that reeks of selfish focus, if you will. And this is also just, this is a very interesting one. And that's not because of, you know, him saying he's not going to endorse this this go around or whatnot, but it's because of the fact that, like, he thinks his word caused division. That didn't happen. Division has been there in politics for quite a long time, and it's only been getting worse every cycle, every year, really. I don't know. This fires me up so much. You and I were texting a little bit about it, and there were some funny text messages going, or funny tweets going out there. One was from Justin Fleece on X. He said, "Do we think Dwayne Johnson is A, blaming the woke agenda for his career slump, Black Adam bombing, Young Rock canceled, no big hit since 2019, or B, an opportunistic asshole who doesn't possess any moral character, or C, both A and B, and you and I both said C. It's both of them. What are your thoughts on Mr. Johnson here going on quite the random publicity spree?
I don't really understand his message here. He was like, well, I endorse Biden and then the woke culture came after me. It's like, no, that those are separate things, buddy. Like, I first of all think, like, when you start say the sentence woke culture in it, like, you already don't know what it is. I love, like, you know, the interview of that lady that wrote a book on wokeness, and they, like, the first interview was a softball question. It's like, what is woke? And she couldn't answer it. She's like, oh, actually, I really don't know. Because they don't know what it actually is.
They don't know what it is.
It's basically, it's become more of just woke is liberal, which woke is being, like, I don't know, aware of other cultures and other cultures, like, inadequacies, or like, not even inadequacies,
and having thoughts. Well, no, but having empathy for the experiences of people outside of yourself.
Yeah. But then now it's like that one word now, like, even when I, like, see it online, even I get a chill down my spine because I know that it's not going to be used in a positive manner the way it should be. Yeah, this reminds me a lot of when Scott Baio endorsed Trump, and he's like, and my career went downhill ever since. I'm like, buddy.
Buddy, what career?
Listen, pal, I don't know if you were really skyrocketing before that. Yeah, I don't know. This seems like a marketing ploy with the WrestleMania crowd. This could seem like that. This could seem like I don't know what this is, because this guy was the most charming dude, highest paid actor. Like, you'd go see a movie with him and you'd see it for him. He's fun in his movies. He's great in those movies. It was awesome to see him come back into the ridiculous Fast and the Furious franchise. And also he was responsible for it getting the kick up that it needed. And so for those, he was a naturally fun guy. Like, and now he's got stuff coming up. There's a Moana live action. There's the Moana sequel. And it's like, you can't really go around with this stupid stuff, buddy, because, like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to him for these dumb comments, because, like, but you're the one stirring up the division now. Like,
yeah,
your comments here are doing that. Like, by just, like, talking about how the woke agenda is a problem, which there's no such thing as a woke agenda. We care about people other than ourselves. That's the woke agenda. It's not to, you know, like, eat your babies or something like that. It's like, it's just a strange thing where, like, we're looking at the bare minimum in human interaction. We're not trying to take over a country and turn your hair blue. Like, just get over it. Like, it feels just so strange. Like, I don't, like, I've never used the word woke in my life except to quote someone else. I'm never going to use the word woke. I'm just gonna, I don't know, like, focus on people of different cultures and enjoy different things that I normally wouldn't. That seems like a better way to be in general, huh?
I think the fact that he literally says what his endorsement caused was something that tears me up in my guts, which is division. You think you caused the division, sir? Like, he just gives himself so much more credit than he really deserves for these things. And even before reading these comments the other day, I've been very anti-Rock for the past couple of years, just because I think he's very, like, I mean,
he genuinely fucked up that Black Adam thing. Like,
he fucked up the Black Adam thing, but he, again, he thinks he's more important than he is.
Yeah.
And for a long time, one of the charming aspects of him was that it didn't go to his head. And it has gone to his head now. I think a lot of people were turned off when the Maui fires happened, and his response to that, like, where he was raising money and everyone was like, yo, asshole, give money, you know, like, stop telling other people. It's just, I don't know. This dude just can't get out of his own way. And I think he has to know what he's doing here. But what it is, I mean, we don't know. And I would like to have a good idea of what his thought process is.
There is a part of me that just says it's a career pivot. He's done with liberal Hollywood, and then he'll just make, like, movies where Dennis Quaid shits on a mound. And, like, then, you know, and hey, guess what? There's money in that. So, you know, enjoy being on that side of it. Because guess what? Yeah. You can have a career being canceled and you'll just be in, you know, painstakingly terrible films, and you start Twitter talk shows and everything. I don't know if that's where he's going to go, but I have a feeling he's going to be, like, realizing that this, like, maybe he doesn't realize it. He has to be humbled enough to not even, like, he doesn't even have to apologize for this. These aren't really that inflammatory comments. They're just kind of stupid. Like I saw them and I'm like, oh, people have said way worse and got getting canceled for it. This is just like, this is just kind of dumb. I mean, I don't know, man. You're like, you say it's division and then you can't say like, I'm upset about the division of the world and then go after woke culture, where woke culture is literally trying to unite the world. If there like is such a woke army, which there's not.
Well, and the other thing is this interview was just so silly to me. There's some other questions that any good reporter could probably ask. Like, let's talk about Vince McMahon and his current troubles and how The Rock is Vince McMahon's boy and has been since the 90s. You know, what did you know about that? What are your thoughts on all that? Because we haven't heard anything from him regarding this. And he is now one of the board members of TKO, which has WWE under their belt. No pun intended, but like, what is going on here? Like this, I don't know. I wonder if we're going to see more come out about this dude and he's just leaning in, I guess. Like maybe he's just like, you know, lubing up the runway for us here with the shit that we're about to learn about him. I don't know.
Great.
That's conspiracy theory, but when in Rome. Speaking of, I don't have a good transition here. I was going to say talk about reality here, but mixed realities and two versions of reality in America. Another Matrix film is happening. This was a surprising bit of news to me, I guess, because The Matrix Resurrections was a nail in the coffin, I thought, for the series that struggled after the first film. And there's differing views on how those other two, the first two sequels were. But just really weird that we're going back to this. I guess it's strong IP, and so Warner Brothers definitely wants to make sure that they're milking it as much as they can. But the difference here is that the Wachowskis are not involved, aside from executive producing, Lana. And Drew Goddard is directing this film, which you were actually into when we were texting about this.
I'll say, if you're going to do like a crappy Matrix, I looked up his stuff and I was like, okay. I mean, at least like it's somebody that has some creative shit in here. So
yeah,
there's that.
But do you think that this is, here's what I expect. Let me ask this differently. I expect that they're going to pivot away from Keanu and, my gosh, I'm forgetting her name suddenly.
Marianne Moss.
Thank you. I was like, Carrie Ann Reeves. And I always think of Carrie Ann Arbor from Dancing with the Stars is the one that always comes to mind. They're probably going to pivot away from there and want to explore a different angle that allows them to then take this story further in the future and continue to make Matrix films and properties. What do you hope to see from this?
Well, I obviously, like you, didn't really like that Resurrections film. I did kind of admire that what they did, where Lana was like, I don't want to make a Matrix film. So what she did is she made like this insane takedown of like, you know, Matrix films and sequels and just any sort of franchise stuff. And so I kind of admired that, like, you know, that move. I was like, okay, that's sort of awesome. I don't like this movie. I think it went off the rails in many different ways. But I did think it was like, I do admire like what she did there. But yeah, I think in this case, you really need to just like abandon all hope with everyone there. I mean, you know, like, yeah, there you could explore a lot with this. You could go deep into prequels with this. You could try to, I don't want a live action remake of the Animatrix, but I mean, there was the fight like where they blotted out the sun. Do some of that stuff, man. I mean, there's like a whole story in there. That is literally like live action remake of the Animatrix. But I think that if you like do that, like get some prequels in there, because we started like those Matrix movies started late. There's a lot of shit that went down. And so, I mean, they've always said, I think at this point, you know, he's too young, but or too old now, but, you know, a Morpheus movie on their own. They've always said they wanted to do that. He's a fascinating character. There's stuff you can do. I think that, I think it was great that Lana was just like, definitely had like middle fingers in the sky while making this movie the whole time. It's like, I don't want to make this movie. It's going to suck. I am literally going to insult everyone involved, all the studios involved for me making this one. And I got to give her that.
I think one of the things that really bothered me about Resurrections was how they handled Morpheus and having that role recast and not really. I mean, I know that the character canonically is dead and, you know, all that. So we're seeing kind of a different version of Morpheus in Yahya Abdul-Mateen the second, third. Jesus. Really firing on all cylinders with names today. But not having Lawrence Fishburne involved at all was really kind of odd. And I don't know. I still have a sour taste in my mouth about that. I do agree. I think that we could definitely explore that character, but I want them to branch out more and not fall into what I always refer to as the Star Wars problem. You know, Star Wars cannot break out of the same family, and that's such a challenge. Let's break away from these characters and explore other wings of what's happening with the Matrix. And that's what I'm hoping for from Goddard.
And hopefully Star Wars is doing that with the Acolyte, which is going to be...
People are shitting on.
It's weird how much they're shitting on. I wasn't that excited from the trailer, but then like I saw the comments and the reactions and I'm like, good Lord, guys, this was like a teaser. What is wrong with you?
You're idiots.
This is like fine.
Well, listen, that's actually a really good segue because we're going to talk a little Star Wars in just a second in our fun wrap-up segment that we like to call Smash Cuts, where I will present Sean with a number of different topics and get your quick reaction. You ready to roll?
Smash Cuts.
I see. Smash I can do cuts. It. Oh, that was pretty good. We have to try to figure out the listeners. We have to run a poll. Which one was me and which one was the... ready? Here we go.
Smash Cuts. Smash Cuts.
It's tough.
Speaking of Star Wars, we got a little bit more news about the Star Wars Dawn of the Jedi film that is going to be directed by James Mangold. And this is that Bo Willimon is going to be joining. So he's very well known in Star Wars land, if you will, for his writing on the first season of Andor. But for me, where I go back is House of Cards. He was a writer on House of Cards, and I love that show. So I'm really fascinated to see that he's involved in putting this story together, whatever it's going to be. This will be the next film that Mangold tackles after the Bob Dylan biopic that he's working on now.
Yeah, this is smash. This is so smash. This is so unbelievably smash. Like, you know, the start of the Jedi era, Mangold directing, and now you're getting someone from what might be the best. The best Disney Star Wars thing that we've had. Like, this is perfect. Thank you so much for getting Bo Williamson in there. Andor, I mean, unfortunately now it's going to be like, it's going to be just like Andor. And like now people are going to have that expectation, which I hope they don't. It's like, hey, listen, Andor is its own exceptional thing. But if they're going to do it like that, it's going to be with this guy doing that in House of Cards. It's space politics. And I love nothing more than space politics, baby. Like, give me some of it. I love it.
Space politics. That could be a movie in and of itself. Amy Adams is going to be starring in a film that is coming out from Searchlight in December called Night Bitch. Aside from the title being kept, which was surprising, I think, to you especially. That was the first thing you said. Can't believe they kept the title. This is going to see Amy Adams play a woman who is thrown into the stay-at-home routine of raising a toddler in the suburbs, who slowly embraces the feral power deeply rooted in motherhood as she becomes increasingly aware of the bizarre and undeniable signs that she may be turning into a dog.
So, like, Mariel Heller does not miss. And, you know, she made an amazing performance from Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me? Mm-hmm. Followed by making a Mr. Rogers movie.
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Nobody thought that was going to be good. And that was amazing with A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And I remember still watching that movie and be like, Jesus, there's a lot of risks in this. there's a lot of risks being taken. So at this point, I'm like, I still can't believe that title's going, because I think... You know, you get in trouble for a title like that, and you either have to like censor it at certain times. I think of like this movie, like back in high school, like What the Fuck Do We Know was the name of the movie, and they had to literally like on newspapers, it was What the Bleep Do We Know. And so something about this is going to be interesting of what they do. Or, you know, bitch is they are using bitch in the sense of a bitch. And so like a dog. So I had to really get this. I had to really clarify that one. So, I mean, technically that's the medical term. So I think you could say night bitch properly. MPA is going to love this one. They're going to have a freaking field day.
I always just go back to the fact that this Searchlight is a Disney company now. So like, I always have that in the back of my head that Disney is going to be pushing night bitch, similar to, you know, talking about the first Omen. Like when you see that film, Sean, you'll see how it really does push a lot of boundaries. And, you know, if you know a little bit of the background with it, they were trying to rate it NC-17 because of one scene in particular. And so remembering that that's a Disney property now is just wild to me.
I think we have to like stop doing that just because it's
we do.
It's like Disney made Poor Things. I'm like, no. Disney signed a couple of checks. Disney had nothing else to do with that.
If nothing else, it is kind of nice to see that happens, that they're not like taking that, you know, PG culture and pushing it through 20th Century Studios and Searchlight and allowing them to kind of do their own thing.
I mean, Deadpool especially is the biggest one where like they are letting Deadpool be Deadpool. And I think that's so friggin' important. It is. And, you know, just with the Disney Hulu merger, I have to figure out stuff. Like, thankfully, the kid's not that old right now, but it's literally like Four Things, Shogun, Mouse House Club. And I'm like, okay, I've got to figure out a way to separate these because this is not going to go well.
Just show her Poor Things now. Get it over with. The Mummy is returning to theaters for its 25th anniversary. Are you big into these return engagements for older films into theaters?
I hope they work. I feel like they don't, which is unfortunate. I mean, because I think a lot of people, if they knew Mummy was coming back into theaters, they would see it. But I think the problem is that there's just so many other movies out. And, you know, I never really do this because I'm like, if I'm going to the theater, I'm going to see something new, especially now when it's a rarer occasion. And, you know, the one thing I did see was Titanic when it came out for the 25th anniversary, but that's because
every night in my dreams.
That was huge for me. And also Sam, who like we both love that movie, Sam never saw it in theaters because she was a couple of grades below me. So that was a tremendous experience. We were so happy we did that. I would love to see like, you know, Brendan Fraser back. I saw a trailer for The Mummy just before Monkey Man, and I was just so freaking happy. I was like, oh my God, Brendan Fraser being a fun action hero. I miss that so much. And I just really wanted like back to those days. And so will it work? I mean, you know, Phantom Menace is coming out pretty soon. That one's going to be really interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah.
Because I think that is the level of like, that's where kids will be brought. Like, see, The Mummy's interesting because kids won't be brought to that one. I don't think. Maybe some kids, but.
But then we also have all the Spider-Man movies going back in the theaters.
Really?
Indeed.
The three Raimi.
All of them. Every one of them is going to be back in theaters.
Oh, like the three Raimis, two Webbs, and a Russo.
And a couple. So, it's going to be what's that? Is that seven films altogether? No, eight films. Maybe nine. Why do I want to say nine?
It's not.
What am I missing?
No, two. All right, let's do this. Spider-Man 1, 2, 3 for Raimi. That's three. There were only two Garfields.
Eight films.
Two. And then there were three. Then there were three Hollands.
Starting April 15th, every week, it starts with Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 3, Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Homecoming, Far From Home, No Way Home.
Yeah, see, I think these are great for the kids. So that would be a great one for the kids, especially.
You're such a dad.
Oh God, you have no idea. Like Brave I think about kids. That now. She's not going to go into a theater until like 2 years, 2-3 years from now. But I'm already thinking about like, you know, like, boy, I wouldn't have missed Migration in theaters if it wasn't for
my God. Let's move on to the next one here. Jodie Comer will reportedly star in 28 Years Later.
Oh, hell yeah. That sounds great. We've heard Killian's back, right? Did we hear Killian's back?
I don't know that they ever confirmed that. Let me see as I dive in.
I mean, I never saw Weeks Later, so I don't even know if. Oh, I don't even know if like original people go into these. So I don't know if it's separate stories.
It's still rumored that Cillian Murphy will be involved.
That would be lovely, but Jodie Comer's great for that. She's someone who you know what Last Duel should have been a better result for her with her career. I mean, she was great in Killing Eve, so I want her to have more of those chances. Oh, excuse me.
All right, and final one here, Sean. Deviled eggs, smash or pass?
Oh, I love deviled eggs.
Me too. Oh, my God.
I love deviled eggs. I actually, the burp I just had internally right there was from a hard-boiled egg. Not as great as a deviled egg, of course, but, you know, sometimes you just got to eat something for breakfast. And I love deviled eggs so much. Oh, my goodness. Mm. And this Easter, we didn't have them. We hosted.
What?
I don't know how this happened. I actually don't
That's
know.
That's a
how
failure. Happened. That's your first hosting of Easter and you didn't have deviled eggs?
I get, you know, everyone brought food and we just didn't think about it. I don't know. Nobody, everyone brought everything. Great stuff. Like, but we didn't have deviled eggs. I feel ashamed. Trust me. This was, hey, it's preseason for the Easter hosters too. Next year's going to be going big. I know it already.
I've fallen into like deviled eggs TikTok, and I get all these different recipes for deviled eggs pasta salad. I've had deviled eggs potato salad, which is really good. All kinds of things. And also air fryer hard boiled eggs, by the way. Throw them in for 11 and a half minutes at 300. Works perfectly.
Turns them into like scotch eggs almost.
I did them yesterday, and it was like a perfect hard boiled egg.
My dad made a scotch egg the other couple of weeks ago, and it was his first time doing it. Those things are like, you know, whoever invented that was just an absolute monster, because it's just like, oh yeah, here's a hard boiled egg. We'll put a bunch of sausage and bread over it, and it was good. That was really, I mean, of course it's good.
Big egg guys. Oh my God. Sean, always a pleasure. What's on the radar for you in terms of movies this week? Are you going to be heading to the theater to see anything?
I mean, Civil War's coming out this week, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet?
I go Monday.
I was iffy about this one just because of like how terrified I am for actual realities, but the reaction that this movie is getting is insanely good. And granted, South by Southwest, everything comes out of there with a great reaction. It's kind of a little bit of a
standing ovation.
Yeah, exactly. Standing ovations and stuff. But this one like is getting, and like it looks more and more complicated than just like, yeah, hey, this isn't just like Republicans versus Democrats. It's like portions of all these states are off and stuff. And I'm excited for this, especially after, you know, and let's please hope this isn't the case. Garland said he's quitting filmmaking, which I think quitting filmmaking means he's going to be gone for a couple of years and then he'll do something again. Cause that would be tragic. And if
Doesn't he do this often,
I think people do this often. I would say that, you know what, if you want to quit filmmaking, that's fine. Keep writing. I want your weird ass stories everywhere we go. So it's like, if you don't want to film anymore, fine. Just keep writing, buddy. Cause I love that. But
he's also just a very good looking man, which has nothing to do with this conversation, well, but I mean, there you go.
Yeah. Also, I just finished this morning Girl State. Answer to Boy State.
The Boy State.
Just like, I mean, I have a bias on the Boy State documentary. I love that one so much. Now I even love the Girl State one even more. But
Need to watch that.
Yeah.
I have Civil War this week, and then I have Henry Cavill, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare on Wednesday. I can't wait.
Is that coming out this week too, or is that an early release?
I believe it's this week, honestly.
That's annoying. Come on. One movie a week. Wait,
maybe it's not. It's the following week.
Okay, good. Oh, wait. I got my April break, so, oh my God.
Abigail. Like, there's a lot coming out. Sasquatch Sunset.
I will be handing that baby over to people numerously during my break and just being I'm catching up, baby.
Out of control. Next week, Sean, we'll have Movie Death Blows on the podcast. A local Philly friend of mine who is a critic, really active on Twitter and TikTok. So check out Movie Death Blow on Twitter or X, if you will, to get to know him. But it should be a lot of fun. We have a lot of good discussions in person. So we thought, hey, let's take it to the podcast. And then you will be back in 2 weeks. And we have some exciting guests coming down the line that I can't wait to share.
Nice.
Sean, happy babying.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.